One of our favorites, a weekly of ours, John Fanta, joining us here on 92.3 The Fan. John, how are we doing today?
What is happening, my friends? It's great to be with you guys. Happy early 4th of July to you two and everybody in Cleveland.
Exactly right. Hey, let me ask you, before we get into, we got some new news on Kevin Durant shaking up things a little bit around the Cavs, some more things to discuss with the Guardians and everything else in between. I saw you tweeting about the college basketball video game. Has it ever crossed your mind that you like could be the voice of a video game? Like, I mean, like a college basketball video game's got to have you involved in some way. I don't know if like the NBA 2K games where they have like all the breaking news reporters or something. Like, there's got to be some involvement of you in that game. But like, does it ever cross your mind that one day you'll likely be the voice of a video game?
Oh man, you know, yeah. Well, then my wife just said, "Hey, you know, can you go change another diaper?" and quickly that vision and dream, JP and Spencer gets cut away by reality. You know what though? I'll tell you this: like in real time, people always say, "Hey, have you ever thought about? Have you ever?" I will say, when the news dropped yesterday that you know EA Sports or 2K or both are developing a college basketball video game, this is what you have a representation for. Immediately, I got a text. You know, from my agent who said, "Hey, just know that I've already put your name out there, and we'll see what we can do." So, to put it,
love that.
I mean, that would be the coolest thing ever. Like, I say that with total and absolute humility. That, like, you guys know this, because you work in the same field. Like, we never quote, you know, fanboy too much. That being said, if somebody wants me to be in some sort of a video game, God almighty, that is the coolest thing ever. And I just hope whatever the video game figure looks like, that it gets me from my good side.
I just love that you're in the mix, John. I needed you in the mix.
Yeah, that's exciting.
I love that you're in the mix. You should be.
I would love that. I would love that.
That we just broke some news.
You never know. We'll see. Oh, never say never. I got no news other than, yes, I would love to be included. Who wouldn't want to be included in a video game?
Yeah, I mean, we all would. At some point, maybe you can just make them just force in a creator player with my name, image, and likeness, and we can make the game a lot cheaper for him, John. I'll tell you that much.
Hey, guys, there's this new big man in College Hoops 2028. Nick Wilson is a dominant center. Oh, wait a minute, guys. Wilson got in trouble off campus last week. He's suspended for the next 3 games.
That sounds about right. That sounds like that would go.
John Fanta joining us here on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. All right, I'm going to play a couple clips for you, okay, John? Because this is now, it's broken within the last half hour or so, so I don't know what you've heard and what you haven't heard. We actually, it's caught off so recently, we ourselves have not even had a chance to react to it. But Kevin Durant was on LeBron James' podcast. You know, he does this podcast with Steve Nash. And so the three of them got talking about Darius Garland and 6'2 and under guards. We'll start with Nash, and then we'll work our way to Durant. Here we go.
Darius Garland, like, he's an amazing basketball player. I think his value right now, we don't talk about him as like this amazing, like, because the era, like, if he played in any other era, I think he would have been like, his value would be through the roof. Like, he's that skilled, he's water bug, he's got every shot, he can play make. But there's an era where it's like, okay, we also have to help that dude out defensively all the time.
Yeah, man.
Like, that's an example for me, because he's such a good basketball player.
Which sounds nice. Like, that sounds like a complimentary thing. But then Durant got to talking, and this is what Durant had to say.
He is, and it's like, but the defensive side of the ball is where, you know, people were attacking. Mm-hmm. If you want a chance to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers, you are going at Darius Garland most of the time on the defensive side.
All right, what do you make of that with Durant there?
Well, I think it's factual. I mean, that's why I, on this show, have said that if there's a player out of the core four that I would look at moving, it is Garland, because he is undersized. But more importantly, it doesn't fit all the way with Donovan Mitchell. You know, I think that there's got to be a bigger guard in place with Donovan Mitchell. Like, Darius Garland's value, and I know that the injury creates some hurdles, guys, but Darius Garland's value coming off of this past season will have never been greater than what it is right now. You'd have to be willing to deal with him coming off of an injury, but it's not something that, you know, this isn't an ACL or something that's going to severely hold him back going forward. So if you're going to acquire value, you have to trade it. You have to be willing to take an educated risk when you make a move. Now, I know that there's been rumblings today saying, you know, the core four is not going anywhere and that the Cavs are going to continue on with what they've been doing. I respect that. I get it. You know, Kobe Altman and Mike Gansey have built this thing out, and the fact is that this team did win 64 games. But I don't disagree with Kevin Durant. Is he being harsh? Yes. You know, I might be called harsh on this show, and I've said on the morning show as well. I've disagreed with somebody over there in a friendly way. That I don't think that Garland is the answer to winning a championship. We're not talking about winning 64 games. We're not talking about winning a playoff series or two playoff series. The Cleveland Cavaliers are supposed to go into next season thinking about one thing, winning it all. And I do not believe that they are in the tier A on paper to win it all, because I have not been able to trust Darius Garland on the playoff stage. If you say back to me, that's unfair, he was hurt, here's what I will say back to that. You better be damn right come next June, because the worst thing you can do is say, we're going to stay status quo, and we believe in what we've got. And, you know, Lonzo Ball's not that. That's not status quo. They made a change. Come on. I mean, it's a complimentary piece. If you stay status quo in any league and you don't reach the goal that is supposed to be very realistic, being late to acknowledge the reality can diminish the value in what you're able to do. That's just plain and simple the fact. Am I being harsh? Maybe I am. Because I'm looking at it from the lens of the Cavs should be looking for a parade next summer, not to win two series.
John, along those lines, as you talk about winning a title and going all in for it, there has been LeBron hysteria the last couple of days with all the reporting out of him picking up his player option and opting in. And he knows the Lakers are prioritizing the future, but he also wants to win and all these different things. And that always seems to necessitate a conversation about whether or not LeBron should come back to Cleveland. If it was up to you, John, as you sit here and talk to us about they got to be all in, they got to make changes, they got to go try to win a championship, would you be open to trying to bring LeBron back to Cleveland if he requested a trade?
Would I be open? Of course. Because Donovan Mitchell, LeBron James, and Evan Mobley, with some shooting, is going to win it all. It provided that, knock on wood, provided everybody's healthy. It gets them over the top. LeBron James is still performing at a very high level. And for those who think otherwise, you're not watching. This is not, you know, I saw somebody yesterday say, well, you know, he could take a pay cut and be on the move. Well, yeah, if he were on one leg and he were just trying to, like, have a swan song being the fifth or sixth best player on a team, you know, go with a Jordan Wizards thing, this is not bad. He's still one of the best players in the game. You know, is he top five today in 2025? I don't know. Probably not. Because just by virtue of guys are younger, guys are more productive over a longer span of time within the season. But are you telling me in the playoffs, are you telling me in the postseason that you're going to go against that guy in the wine and gold and Donovan Mitchell, and if they were able to hang on to Mobley and all this, and they got some three-point shooting? Like, come on. If he's open to it. Do I think it's realistic? My answer would be no. I don't think it's truly realistic. But the question wasn't if I thought it was realistic or not. The question was, would I be open to it? Heck yeah. Heck yes. Come on. Because I know what that guy's capable of, and I know how motivated he would be to win one more.
John Vanta joining us here on 92.3 The Fan. John, Guardians obviously in a rough stretch. I know we've done this now 2 weeks in a row where we have you. You're not a wind-up doll for us, I promise, where we just yell about the offense and then we rage about the offense. But this is a pivotal stretch for the Guardians over this next little nine-game outcome here. Cubs tonight, three-gamer there. You got to take on the Tigers after that. It's not an easy schedule up ahead. Is this the pivotal stretch for the Guardians, though, in deciding whether or not they buy or they sell at the deadline or wave the white flag on the season?
Well, I think that they are going to sell some at the deadline. To what degree is what the next 2 weeks before the All-Star break will determine. They'll call it in their front office, you know, being strategic. But let's face it, guys, they're far from a championship caliber team, and they're far from even a team right now that would be in a championship series. If the playoffs starting today, they're three games back of the last wild card, which is a little bit comedic in the American League, to be candidly honest. The fact is, if you go 2 weeks from now, you go into the All-Star break, look, you got to play better baseball. I mean, the fact that Chase DeLauter isn't up yet, what are you waiting for?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are you waiting on? Like, I don't understand, guys. It'd be like owning a steakhouse, right? And you have a wide open table for a family of eight in the front of the steakhouse. And a family of eight walks in and you have no reservations and you got a world-class chef. And the family of eight says, "Hey, could we get a table?" And you said, "No, you know, maybe you should try that fast food restaurant down the road." I'm not going to disparage any fast food restaurant, but Maybe you should go down there down the road. They got a nice value meal. You just lost $500. You're like, well, what are we doing? And if you come back to me and say right now, we don't know if he's out. Who cares? So what? So he has a rough patch if he comes up here and doesn't hit the baseball. He's ready to go. Do not tell me that the alternative is going a lot better than what Chase DeLauter would bring. It can't get any worse. This offense stinks. It stinks.
Mm-hmm.
They have more than half their lineup is 4A hitters. You know, it's Matt LaPorta's and Luis Valbuena territory. This is the worst offense they've had, in my humble opinion, since Manny Acta was managing in Cleveland. It's been a long time since they've been this poor offensively, and they even had some years where they made the playoffs and they were not a good offensive team. But this team, the month of June was a disaster, an absolute disaster, where like the pitching was the seventh best ERA in the league in June.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're over relying on your pitching. They have to change some things up. They got to put it together and it's got to start right now. And don't, you know, when you say, "Oh, well, it's a tough week." You know what? Right now, the Guardians wouldn't, the way they've been playing, they wouldn't beat anybody. You got to figure it out right here, right now. Hope that off day and a trip to Wrigley, get out of Cleveland, because Lord knows that didn't help, and put some better baseball together, man.
John, along those lines, and with all those grievances in mind that I think we all share with this team right now, would you say that the Guardians have wasted Jose Ramirez?
No, I don't subscribe to that, because they made the ALCS last year, and I've said this before, guys. Like, I wish they had done something more in the off season. But when you look at the climate of baseball, and the third wild card on both sides has created a bit of a dilemma. That's why I actually think the Guardians, you know, this might sound like a loser mentality, because I'm Mr., you know, go for it, right? The third wild card right now in the American League is just, it's so far away from the level of the top tier teams in a 5 or 7 game series, in my opinion. I know you want to get in, and in 2023, the Diamondbacks and the Rangers both ended up, you know, making it to the World Series, and it was kind of a quirky year. And I argued that a couple weeks ago. But what I would say is, like, I don't want to paint the false reality here. Like, this team is who they are. As rewarding as last year was, is as frustrating as this season has been. And I think that's the part that stinks. But I do think, and maybe you guys will have some sort of a take off of this going forward, but this is my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I think you know, it's the dog days of summer, and this baseball team is playing some pretty poor baseball. So then what happens is we get into a vacuum because there's nothing else going on. And we say, well, now we try to go super big picture on baseball when we're reacting day to day. And look, the day to day for the Guardians has been bad. But they've been in the postseason 6 of the last 9 years. And in 2017, I know it's a little bit of a ways away, they did make some transactions that said, hey, we're going to spend, we're going to go for it. Last year, the transactions, the moves that they made, Lane Thomas ended up hitting, having the biggest hit of the season. So the point is, though, that third wild card is adding a lot of clutter across the league. And so the problem is the trade deadline's not – like, you might have another deadline where it's not as active because these organizations don't know what to do because they don't want to send the wrong message to their fans, too, and sell everything off. Whereas if the Guardians continue to go downhill for their future and to make the most of what's remaining of the Ramirez era, the irony is they might be best served by selling some assets off and saying, here's how we do this in 2026. Because this is bad. Chris Antonetti, to me, everyone's like, get rid, you know, people are really going off the deep end. I do think these guys can be afforded a year like this, a bad year. And you have to say this cannot happen again. You just have to say it. You have to come back next season with him. But when you've been to the playoffs, the amount that you've been with Jose and you've had the teams you've had and the pitching you've had, I don't think that they have just wasted Jose Ramirez. I don't believe that.
John, fantastic stuff as always. Appreciate the insight, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Thanks,
thank
John.
You.
Appreciate you guys. Happy 4th, Cleveland.
All right, good stuff right there from local kid done good, John Fant, on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We'll put it out to you guys, 216-474-0092. Is Kevin Durant right about Darius Garland? We'll do it next right here on The Fan. We have this latest audio. Kevin Durant was on with Steve Nash and LeBron because LeBron moved off J.J. Redick to now, you know, do a podcast with Steve Nash because apparently that's a thing that we needed in life. Steve Nash, by the way, didn't sound horrible. We'll get to what he had to say. He sounded pretty good on it, if I'm being honest. But this was Durant talking about Darius Garland. We got a couple clips here. Here we go.
He is, and it's like, but the defensive side of the ball is where, you know, people were attacking. Mm-hmm. If you want a chance to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers, you are going at Darius Garland most of the time on the defensive side.
I mean, Durant's not saying anything that Boston didn't show us.
He's not saying anything Tyler Hero didn't say either.
Right. I mean, no, but exactly right. I think about it. How many in those Boston regular season games did we know that that was the game plan? They would target Darius, and they would make it obvious that they were matchup hunting to try to get on Darius Garland to try to expose him for the traffic cone that he is defensively. And so, like, there's so much of this conversation that I find fascinating, and it really is two-layered, though, Spencer. It's not only about the defensive side of things when it comes to Darius. It's the other side of this, and this is the heavily talked about side, which is the, can you have 2 6'2" or under guards play together in the same space? Can this be something that is something that the Cavs can get away with? And this was Durant on that.
6'2" and under guard is at a premium no more as a starter. Maybe as a backup, but you have to be.
We just talked about this the last night.
It's gotten compressed.
It has.
Right? It's compressed.
Yes.
It's at like either Donovan Mitchell, Drew Holiday, 6'3". You got to be.
You can't get picked on defense. That's the thing, because we play in such the pick on game that they will really, literally, if you can't guard, they will bring you up every play.
Every
6 foot, 6'1", and you're not a bulldog like a Davion Mitchell, Drew Holidays on the defense side, or you're not an offensive flat out savant like Kyrie, where you can score on dudes 7 feet easily in ISO. Then I just can't see it.
Like, I don't think it's an accident. One of the big takeaways I had from the draft night, and I don't see anybody else discussing it, but maybe that's the genesis of this conversation, or at least should be, past Cooper Flagg. You want to know the run of guards in the NBA draft this year?
Yeah, I can't say I noticed this.
7 straight. It goes Cooper Flagg, then it goes 7 straight guards. You want to know how many were under 6'4"?
0.
1. You got 1. He was 6'3". So, like, I mean, like, the amount of these guards, and not only guards that are big that are being taken as those are the premiums in the NBA right now. You can't be 6'2 and be a guard in the NBA. If you are a guard, I think that's part of the reason why the Cavs were so interested in LaMelo to begin with. Like the idea that he's 6'5, 6'6, yeah. He's got a little bit of a wingspan attached to him as well. Like you can combo that up with Garland, with Donovan, and not have to worry about being small while on top of it not having to worry about being picked on defensively.
Yeah, can I just say too, like this is part of the reason why I love when Fant is on, because you could feel like you have, like you feel pretty firm on like a stance you have on something in relation to sports or like the Cavs or whatever. And he is so passionate with his thoughts on things that like he always makes you reconsider. Like you always leave a John Fant interview like reconsidering something that you talked about because he's just so passionate about it. And that's what we love about John. And as I was sitting there listening to him, like, yeah, like the thing that stood out to me maybe most, everything you're saying is true. Everything Kevin Durant was saying, everything John said. But the thing that he brings up is like, if you're going to run it back and you're going to see if Darius Garland can, you know, win you that championship and actually be a piece that helps you get there, you better be right. And I think that's like the important thing right now is like, okay, last offseason, we wanted them to do something, but they didn't, and they stood pat. And it turned into a 64-win season where we had a lot of high expectations. And so it was the first year of a coach. Like, their big change last year was you changed coaches, and that was supposed to be the thing. And it looked like it was going to be awesome. Like, it looked like that was the right decision. Then you get to the playoffs, what happened, and now it's like, are you really going to do the same thing again? Where, like, you make a couple small little tweaks and then just run it back and, like, expect for, like, a different result this time around. And I think like it, like this offseason feels like it's even more essential now that you make that bigger move. And I also sort of got to wondering, as John was talking about this, and we've talked about it as well, especially with the KD comment thrown in, is like, I almost wonder if Darius and Jarrett almost have to like coexist together on this team. Because the big thing we always say when it comes to, well, why you can make it work with Darius and Donovan and having an undersized guard out there on the perimeter that gets picked on a lot is that you know you are so good inside when you have Evan Mobley and Jared Allen to sort of clean things up.
What I think these clips are telling you, though, is that they don't believe that to be true. Like, they don't believe that Darius and Donovan can coexist, even if you have Jared Allen and Evan Mobley being as good defensively as they are.
Well, I'm not even... Okay, so I don't... Maybe I should have said coexist. Maybe I just said, like, they basically, like, can only exist on this team together to, like, limit the damage. Because my thing is, like, if you had Darius... If you trade just Jared Allen, for example.
Yeah.
And your solution is, well, we're going to have now Darius is going to be on an island even more by himself, and Mobley's going to be, like, more
of a five.
Right,
because the defense gets taken away.
Now it's, like, you don't have that extra help. Now it's all on Evan. You know what I'm saying? So, like, it helps to have, like, an extra line defender in your front court.
Yeah, but
that
Spencer,
maybe erases some of the deficiencies of Darius Garland.
I get what you're saying, but the massive takeaway out of this should be the entire NBA is telling you Donovan and Darius don't work together. There was a time where maybe it did, and a very recent time where Donovan and Darius could coexist together. The game is moving rapidly. Like, I brought up the NBA draft and the seven guards for a reason, because look at how the NBA is viewing what is currently going on. These guys are valuable because of their height. VJ Edgecombe is valuable because of his height. Ace Bailey is valuable because he's 6'8". He's supposed to be 7 feet tall. He's 6'8". I don't know where the 4 inches got lost, but he's 6'8" as a guard. Like, this is what people value in today's NBA. Go even further. The sixth overall pick, Trey Johnson. If he's 6'5", just on and on the list goes. Igor Demon out of BYU. That's a 6'8" guard in the 8 spot. Like, this is just how this works. I think the league is trying to tell you in so many ways, if you have these two undersized combo guards, you got a big fit problem. And we've been paying attention to it for how long? We've noticed that this has been an issue. But this is Durant. This is LeBron. This is Steve Nash all laughing. They're laughing at Darius Garland in this clip. They're talking about how valuable he is, but they're talking about how valuable he is years ago, not how valuable he is right now. And that's a sad reality for the Cavs. Will they make the adjustments to what the league is currently offering up?
Well, and that's why when we talk about these trades and different things that can happen, the concept is splitting up Darius and Donovan. Like, I think there are teams that can afford to have like one undersized guy depending on what you have around him. But having two is the issue.
I think you can get away with one.
Yeah,
and Donovan's not
especially when you have one who's a scorer like Darius, because Darius is a great, an elite scorer. But it's just like you have to have ways to sort of combat his defensive issues, And that's part of the reason why I bring up the Jared Allen part of it, because it's like, yeah, if you don't have a way to sort of solve, like right now the Cavs kind of have a way to solve that because they have Jarrett Nevin. But if you get rid of, like, I guess my larger point on that specifically was like, if you got rid of just Jarrett, would we see Darius get even more exposed than he already does?
Yep,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. Like, I think that would expose the larger problem.
I mean, he's already pretty exposed. I mean, Durant couldn't have made it any more clear.
True.
When we see Darius on the court, we're going headhunting for Darius.
Yeah.
That's the matchup that we want. We want to put our guy on Darius, and we'll switch all day in order to get on Darius because that's an easy bucket.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, no, that's bad news for Darius. You're not hiding anymore. The league's caught on. If you want to score, go after Darius.
I think what's so interesting about this is that
openly talking about this on a podcast in July. My goodness.
That's the thing. Is like, these are all conversations we've had, right? Like, we've talked about can Darius and Donovan coexist.
We've been talking for a couple years now about this.
Is this the right fit?
But like, these are
three. But now, yes, now it's being brought to light by
two active
NBA
players
savants,
and a former league MVP.
Some of the best players to ever play this game. MVPs in this league are all talking about this, and it's like, yeah, that's not good. That's not good. I mean, like you said, Steve Nash is the only one who brought any positivity to it, and his positive spin was, hey, back in my day, he would have been great.
He would have been great 20 years ago. Oh, fantastic. Thanks for the compliment, Steve. 216-474-0092. Is Kevin Durant right? And Spencer's got a LeBron comp you have to hear. We'll do it all next. It's Afternoon Drive right here on The Fan. You think it's coincidence that in every trade scenario that LeBron is mentioned for involves Darius Garland in some way, and now he's on his own podcast talking about how Darius Garland doesn't work in the NBA and how Darius Garland isn't the right fit for the Cavs? It's a pretty vocal podcast he has right here. I'm just going to put that out there.
Yeah.
I'm just going to just float that one out to the masses. You do with whatever that you want.
Well, it's funny you say that because I was thinking the same thing from a different perspective where I was like, if he's late GM, as everybody calls him, does this mean that the Lakers won't be trading for Darius Garland if they do make a LeBron trade?
I mean,
like, is he basically telling the Lakers, like, yeah, you don't want this guy? That's the problem. Like, I see what you're saying. It's like,
hey, well, he doesn't care about the Lakers.
He doesn't work. He doesn't work. So trade him for me, and I'll come save Cleveland. But like, if the Lakers are hearing this, do you think they're like, hey, the guy that like basically runs our team right now, he says this guy doesn't work. Do we really want him now?
I mean, I guess it works. It works
that's
both
bad
ways.
GMing if you're LeBron.
It does work both ways. If you were trying to add value to yourself or get rid of value for Darius in the process, maybe you'd be. I don't know. Whatever. We got two galaxy brain on this. You can slice it both ways. I'll concede on that. You can slice it both ways. I think LeBron, in his own right, though, I think he would be the type to be like, hey, Cleveland, you don't see this as a problem. I'm going to involve a former league MVP winner and then Kevin Durant, who's won multiple finals and basically two great basketball minds. And we're just going to have this chop it up conversation about how what you do and what you've been doing does not work in today's game, and how a guy in Darius Garland that you believe in is a defensive liability. Like, you know how many people in the NBA suck at defense? There are so many guys that are just bad at defense in the NBA.
Go look up like all the defensive ratings, like player by player.
There are a lot of traffic cones out there, and there's a lot of people that you just get matchup hunt, and you can just take advantage of. And for some reason, these three were selecting Darius Garland as the talk of the NBA when they wanted to highlight.
Do we think Darius is ever going on that podcast after that conversation?
I mean, if I'm Darius, I'm livid at this whole thing.
Do you think Donovan?
I'm like, you imagine Darius?
Donovan, who's very close with Darius, is going to go on that podcast.
I don't know. Donovan right now is too busy going after WNBA stars. So I don't know if he's got a say in whether or not he...
Oh, is he chimed in on that?
Oh, he talked... Well, yeah, in our defense, and this is why we love Donovan.
I didn't see his comment.
Donovan responded to Sophie Cunningham trashing the city of Cleveland by saying, Cleveland in the summer is very, very nice. So he's got other battles. Apparently he needs a fight. His running mate in this whole entire thing is getting trashed by three of the best players the NBA's seen in my lifetime. And he's over there saying, no, Cleveland in the summers is great. It's a good time. Hey, Donovan, I know you're near the keyboard. Why don't you stick up for Darius?
I mean,
he's being stabbed in a podcast in the middle of the day, and you're not even paying attention. You're going after a WNBA player no one's going to remember 3 years from now.
He's
only famous because she sticks up for another WNBA player in Caitlin Clark. Maybe get to work on what matters the most here, Donovan.
In his defense, the Sophie Cunningham stuff did come out first. So maybe we just haven't given him enough time to respond
yet. Maybe he's got his midday
siesta
going on right now.
I mean, I don't know where he is in the world right now, but maybe he's busy with something.
If he's not taking a nap.
You know somebody sent it to him.
Somebody wake him up. Wake him up from his midday siesta.
Show him what's being said.
Tell him how he's, his buddy, his running mate, is being lambasted in these streets, these audio streets left and right, and by a Twitter assassin himself and Kevin Durant. And the man has to pay attention, because right now, if he wants to save this team, the talk of the NBA is the idea that Donovan and Darius together don't work and can't work because Darius can't play defense and they're too short.
Well, and what's it like from his perspective? Like, it's fascinating because The comeback for him is just, okay, we'll prove you that it does work. Like, we'll prove you wrong. But the problem is, we now have...
We've been doing 3 years of evidence
say,
of him
we
not, of
we
him
now
not
have
being able to do
3 years of, like, proof of concept that it hasn't worked and that at some point it falls apart. And the other problem is in that from that clip, too, is, like, it'd be one thing if Darius... I'm not going to say... I think you can tell when you watch the tape. Like, Darius does work hard to try to defend these guys. It's not that I think he's lazy. He's not like Tyler Hero, where it's just like, I quit. Like, you talk about traffic cones. I don't think Darius is a traffic cone.
I mean, he's small, and he's not very strong. Yes, they just go around
him. He just can't defend, like, against them. But he works hard. He tries to defend them.
I don't need the try-hard Hall of Fame. I need someone that can actually do it.
But that's my point. It's like... It's one thing for him to like attempt to, but his problem is that he gets hurt all the time. Like they talked about like Drew Holiday, right? Like he's 6'3", but he's a bulldog, right? So he makes up for it because like he's gonna body you. Darius is like because of all the injuries, he follows you into the lane. One hit to the face and he's out
and
for 2 months.
He puts his head into your hip
that's
and all of a sudden
problem.
He's out.
It's like there's this fragility about him that I think has become an issue where like. It's twofold. It's not only are they looking at you like, well, he's not a very good defender, but it's also like, even if he tries to be a good defender, he gets hurt, it seems like, every time he gets into the playoffs and like works hard to try to make up for what he can't do defensively. Like, it's just always been an issue for him. And so I agree, like, I don't know what the solution is other than changing out some pieces and parts.
And I it's amazing.
Starting with maybe him.
Listen, we didn't need three prominent NBA voices to be out here in a podcast together ripping you for it to be reality. It's been staring us in the face for a while. But at what point will Kobe Altman wake up and say, the bet I made with these guys? And listen, I'll never begrudge Kobe Altman for going out there and trading for Donovan Mitchell. Like, Darius was here. It was what it was. You drafted Darius. Take that for what it's worth. When Donovan becomes available, you go ahead and you take your opportunity and you take your big swing and you make the trade and you go at it. And hey, maybe
it was the perfect trade, too, because they banked on this is a guy that we think we can convince to stay here.
For sure. But now it's been 3 years. We watched Darius absolutely suck in that Knicks series 3 years ago. Game 3, I can't erase out of my brain. We watched him then get injured in the past two. Meanwhile, in some of these series, I mean, my goodness, there's games in that, even in the Pacers series this year, where it was like, what are we doing here? Game 5 was an absolute disaster from Darius Garland start to finish. Like we've seen it. We've seen it. I'm tired of this movie. And so that's why, whether it's John Fanta who joined us at 4 o'clock or whether that's Nick sitting there in the chair on most days, like we've gone over the idea that they are very... I mean, we're all at our wits' ends with this, but it doesn't feel like anything's changing. It feels like Kobe Altman wants to run this back one more time, and this is the big voices saying you're wrong here.
Well, and that's where like I wonder, Kobe touts so much development, you know, learning from our playoff experiences, all these things, and like and I agree, like there's a level of like Evan Mobley can raise his game another step, and I do think Darius probably has a little bit of room to still grow, not physically necessarily, but like just from a game standpoint, like the conversation we're having, but like that can all be true. But I like it. We've every year there's been like, okay, the first year you get bounced by the Knicks. You hadn't been there. Okay. That's your excuse, right? Next year you go back, you make some tweaks. You add a Max Strus, for example. It's like, okay, you made some changes. You still get bounced now in the second round. You're still not on that level. Year 3 of this, And last year, your big thing was we changed out coaches. And so that was your reasoning for keeping it together. The reasoning for keeping it together this year is what? Health? You think health is going to be on your side next year?
I'm out of answers.
That's the only reason. That and the development piece, which I do give some credence to.
Or they were just worried about the... Well, one, there's a couple things I think they would tell you. And I think they did try to tell you this in the press conference. Development is one with Atkinson having a full season, full off season,
which I do subscribe to.
Instead
there's
of him just being off in, you know, Team France over there in Paris and helping out for the Olympics, so he'd have a full season. And then ultimately, I mean, I really do think a lot of what they're basing everything on is just the idea that
the Eastern Conference thing, like that. There's this window because all these teams have injured stars now, and they can. I mean, because I, like I said, I get keeping it together the first time you lose. I get keeping it together mostly the second time you lose. The third time, with an after a new coach comes in and gets you to a 64 wins, and then it just falls apart. I don't know.
What I was going to say is I really do think it's the idea that they're not going to get the best player back in return for a Darius Garland trade.
Okay.
And so I think they're concerned about the idea that if they get 80 cents on the dollar and they don't get the best player back in return, then it wasn't a worthwhile investment for him. And I look at that wrong. If you're constructed poorly and you need the pieces of the puzzle to fit right, then moving off of Darius might be the only way to actually make that work. So you would take what is perceived as a step back to potentially take a few steps forward. But for some reason, Kobe Altman has not been able to deal with that reality.
Well, and I do understand the concept of, like, you don't want to get less than what you think the players value. I 100% understand that. No, you don't. And I've been adamant on this station, like, you don't just make a trade to make a trade. Like, you don't just trade Darius for peanuts
This is Kevin Durant, Steve Nash, and LeBron James.
You do need to get something back that is, like, going to be a fit for your team, is my point.
Can you think of a time where three NBA players like this, and obviously Nash isn't playing right now, but three people of this caliber sat around a room and just dogged a player the way that they did right here? Yeah.
No, I can't. This is kind of wild. But like I said, I understand not just trading him for peanuts, but I also understand where it's like, at some point you have to change up something other than just being like, well, hey, if we run it back again, now we have a new coach. And if we run it back again, well, now we have a coach who had more time to spend, and we have Lonzo Ball now. There has to be a deeper thing. And I think when
Donovan Mitchell hasn't woken up from his sleep yet.
And I think when Kobe doesn't make these moves sometimes, I think it starts to look like he just is too, he's too afraid to give up on them. I think that's what it becomes. I don't necessarily think that's true, because Kobe has been pretty aggressive in what he's done. But I think sitting here today, as you see other teams make moves like Milwaukee and whatnot, you're like, well, why can't they make a move? Like, why can't they make, what are they so afraid of? It comes off that way, but that might not be the case behind the scenes, to your point, that they probably are waiting to get the right value.
All right, we'll get more into this. Busy football, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock hour as well. Got a lot of NFL on the docket for you guys. We'll react to more of this, though, in the lead. It happens next. It's Jonathan Peterlin, Spencer German. Afternoon Drive with you guys right here on The Fan.